You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks and our show on the CITR webs, CITR Studios, 101.9 FM. I have to figure out which radio we're doing under, so that's what we're doing it under. Yes, of course. And of course, your co-host is Kelly Rayburn. That's me. And Michael Rubin will be coming by in just a few moments. So right now I'm going to play you a little episode of Alzheimer's disease, a guide for parents and families. It was back, I mean, we don't normally talk about those kind of, I mean, we do probably would talk about Alzheimer's disease and a situation of the cause of the brain situation, and that could lead into a real catastrophically kind of a disability disorder for that matter. So I'm going to play you for about 28 minutes or so about Alzheimer's disease, a guide for patients and families. This is on YouTube. Enjoy.
Hard thing to face, but it's always important to get help early.
That's because treatment might make a difference how quickly the disease progresses.
Can you tell me how your summer was?
Good, real good.
This is a guide for Alzheimer's patients and their families looking toward an uncertain future. You'll discover there's a lot you can do to get the most out of this time together.
Education is a very important part of the whole Alzheimer's disease process. Trying to maximize the quality of life for an individual should really be a goal of all of us as we care for people with Alzheimer's disease.
All right, this is some sort of a video for that matter, so we're just going to skip all that. Either. and go to one of the research on the latest Alzheimer's disease research. So I thought it would be more of a documentary, but it doesn't look like there is, but we'll figure out something here. okay, this one is the latest on Alzheimer's disease research. Hopefully
Thanks
this will
much.
Be good.
Welcome, here we go. Everybody. Thank you for coming tonight. I was given strict instructions that even if you have a burning question that I'm not supposed to answer it, that we should wait till the end. If you think you're going to forget your question, you're in the right lecture. But write it down, and I promise we'll get to it at the end. So I tried to program this so that you don't have to listen to me lecture for too long. And instead, we'll leave plenty of time at the end to answer questions, because I know that there will be some. So let me tell you about a patient I saw in clinic recently. So this is Mr. J. He came with his wife to my clinic. He's 68 years old. And he doesn't think that there's a whole lot of problems. Sure, I'm getting a little bit more forgetful, but so is everybody else. And his wife said, no, Dr. Kirshner, this is actually becoming a problem. He asks me the same question over and again, as if he just can't remember the answer to it. And each time he asks the question, it's like it's a whole new experience for him. She got alarmed once when I think they took a trip to Las Vegas, that was it. And they had been talking about this particular feat. I think there was an indoor waterfall in this particular hotel. And they were really excited about seeing this indoor waterfall. When they arrived at this hotel in Las Vegas, they went to see it right away. Then they walked over to the registration desk, handed over their driver's license and their credit card. And, you know, further down the registration desk, the man overheard somebody else saying to his wife, we need to go see that indoor waterfall. And he turned to his wife and said, we need to go see that. That didn't seem normal to her. So he's retired, actually. He's still volunteering at a museum. He does absolutely everything he wants to do. I mean, his life is great. He's got volunteer activities. He exercises. He's not getting any help from anybody. He's doing everything by himself. And so my first question to you, so there's some audience participation here. So what do you think? So choice A is that Mr. J is just like the rest of us. He'd better get used to the normal effects of aging. How many people think that's right? Okay. Choice B is he might have a problem, but why bother doing any tests? There's nothing that can be done anyway. Okay, you don't like that one. How about get the Alzheimer's disease test and, by gosh, get on therapy as soon as possible to prevent this from worsening? I wish that this were correct, and I'm going to talk to you today about some evidence that we're getting there, but I think D is actually the right answer, is that there are some tests available that have some pros and cons, and there is some value in making a diagnosis, but there's no cure yet. So this is kind of the land that we live in nowadays. So let's spend the next hour kind of talking about this. So what tests should we do in him? Well, let me tell you about what's currently available today, what's kind of standard of care. In other words, what you would get if you came to my clinic tomorrow. So neuropsychological testing. So this is spending 4 to 5 hours with one of our lovely, talented neuropsychologists who does nothing with their days except for think about IQs and memory and visual spatial function and all of these sorts of things. The outcome of that kind of testing is to find out, is there in fact an abnormality? In other words, compared to other people your same age, your same level of education, demographics roughly the same, are you scoring outside of the norm compared to that population of people in a wide variety of tests? So these tests cover a whole bunch of different cognitive domains. So for instance, memory is an example of a cognitive domain. Language, like word finding, like can you hand me that thing over there. Visual spatial function, things like navigating, being able to judge distances and directions. Executive function, the ability to organize, to plan, to think logically, to avoid being distracted. So those are the kinds of things that a neuropsychologist can test and can give some answers as to whether a person is normal or abnormal on these kinds of tests. Blood work. So I'll send Mr. J to the lab. We'll make sure that his thyroid function is fine. Hypothyroidism is a rare cause of memory loss, but gosh, it's easy to fix, so why not check? Vitamin B12 deficiency, same thing. It's easy to check. It's very rarely the cause of a person's memory problem, but why not check it anyway? And depending upon an individual's health history, whether you've had cancer before or heart disease or whatever, there might be other tests that that you and a doctor might decide would be worth pursuing, depending upon your particular situation. And brain imaging. So I'll send Mr. J off to the MRI scanner. Am I sending him there to get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease? No, I'm sending him there to make sure that he doesn't have a stroke or he doesn't have a tumor, or he doesn't have something else that we can see on the MRI scan that might explain his problems and might take us down a different pathway in terms of treatment. So his test results. So we got neuropsychological testing on Mr. J, and not surprisingly, you know, really congruent with the story that his wife told was the story that we got in the neuropsychological testing, and that is that he had a pretty severe impairment in his ability to learn, to memorize a list of words, and then after a 20-minute period of distraction, to be able to remember that list of words. Tests like that, he had a lot of trouble with, but he scored really quite normally on other types of tests, tests of language or visual spatial function or executive function. And his caregiver, his wife, was given a kind of standard questionnaire and really, you know, endorsed again the same thing she endorsed to me, and that's that he's functioning completely normally. You know, there's nothing that he's had to give up as a result of this problem. She's not really giving him any extra help. He's holding it together. He had normal blood work, and he had a normal MRI scan. So the next question is, what do you think? Is he fine? Well, no, he had an abnormal test result, right? Does he have dementia? Or who thinks it's C, somewhere in between? C is what I hate, in between, but unfortunately a lot of the world is in between, and a lot of the field that I live in is in between. Things are rarely black and white. And one of the things that we grapple with as a field is that this distinction between normal aging and dementia is not a binary distinction. This is a continuum. And there's still a lot that we have to learn about what is, I don't know what normal aging is. I really don't know, because we're all accumulating things in our brain with age, and I don't know where to draw the line between what's normal and what's not. Here are the definitions of these terms, and you're going to see these terms used more and more, even in the popular press. Dementia means that a person has had a clear objective change in their cognition. They used to be smarter, and now they've had a clear decline in their ability to think. And it has reached a threshold where they are now needing help with everyday function. So they're not able to hold it together. They need help with maybe being able to maintain their checkbook, or maybe being able to, you know, remember to pay the bills. Maybe they made some mistakes while driving. It doesn't, you know, when we hear the word dementia, we picture grandpa stuffed to the back of a nursing home drooling on himself. That's the picture that comes to mind. But medically, the word doesn't imply necessarily that degree of severity. It just means that somebody has had an impact on their ability to function. Mild cognitive impairment implies that a person has had that same decline in cognitive function, but it just hasn't reached that threshold of having a functional impact, of affecting their day-to-day ability to get by. And normal aging is anything less than that. And gosh, there are a lot of people out there, maybe even people in this room, who believe that their memory has declined a bit, but they still score normally on tests. And so they wouldn't be told that they have mild cognitive impairment because they're scoring normally. What do we do with those people? Because those people might not all be normal. I don't know. So this is a continuum, and this continuum is part of what we struggle with as a field. One of the questions that I get asked almost every single time by patients I take care of is, what's the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's disease? This is an important distinction, and I want you to be sure you understand this point tonight. These two terms cover two completely different categories of things, two different dimensions. Okay, so I talked a bit about what dementia is. Dementia denotes the severity of somebody's cognitive symptoms. Mild cognitive impairment also denotes a milder severity of those cognitive symptoms. And we already talked about what those terms mean. So dementia implies something about how severe the symptoms are. On the other hand, Alzheimer's disease tells us something about what the cause is So it's not normal to have either mild cognitive impairment or dementia. Something must be causing it. So think of it this way. Mild cognitive impairment and dementia are umbrella terms that include a whole long list of causes. I'm a doctor. I have to memorize all 257 different causes of dementia, most of which are incredibly rare. Alzheimer's disease gets a lot of press. Why? Because it is by far and away the most common cause of dementia. The statistics are scary. It accounts for 2/3 of all cases of cognitive decline in people over the age of 60. 2/3 of cases. It's the sixth leading cause of death in 2013. More than 5 million Americans in 2013 suffered from Alzheimer's disease. And it costs the nation $203 billion of money that you can count, plus all of the caregiving time that went unpaid by children and by spouses, that who knows how much all that is worth. It's an immense disease. And despite that, our government funds Alzheimer's disease at something like a tenth of what it funds other illnesses like AIDS, very important disease. Cardiovascular disease, cancer, all get much more money from our federal government than Alzheimer's disease. You may have heard in the news that recently the president signed into law $122 million extra. That's good money, but we need a lot more money thrown at this problem. This is costing our nation a lot. There are a lot of other causes of dementia that I won't talk about tonight. They include strokes, Parkinson's disease, and a associated disease called Lewy body dementia, frontotemporal dementia. Many, many other things can cause dementia, but let's focus tonight on the most common cause. Here's another way to look at these statistics. So Alzheimer's disease is fairly uncommon when you're in your 60s. About 1% of the population has symptoms of Alzheimer's disease dementia in their 60s. As you get into your 70s, it becomes more common, but you see this exponential rise that happens during your 70s, into your 80s, and into your 90s, to the point that roughly half of the population, 85 plus, has symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, and at autopsy has definite evidence of it. It is the rare 95-year-old who does not have cognitive decline and who does not have microscopic evidence of Alzheimer's disease at autopsy. There are a few 97-year-olds out there who have managed to escape this. These people are the subject of intense study. We want to understand them. There aren't enough of them out there to study. What are the risk factors? Well, as you can guess, based on that last graph, age is by far and away the most important risk factor. By leaps and bounds, it accounts for most of the variants, most of the incidence of Alzheimer's disease. Genetics plays a role too. It's a weaker role than age, but it does play a role. Family history, just like type 2 diabetes. My mom has type 2 diabetes. Her mom had type 2 diabetes. Two of my mother's three brothers have type 2 diabetes, and my chances of getting type 2 diabetes are high. And Alzheimer's disease is kind of like that. You don't directly inherit it from a parent, but if there's a whole lot of it in a family, then you know you might be at more risk of it. There's a particular gene that you might have heard about. It gets some press. The APOE4 gene is one gene that we know of that gives people increased risk of getting Alzheimer's disease sometime in their life. Vascular risk factors are really important, and there's a lot of evidence that, getting back to type 2 diabetes again, type 2 diabetes is a strong independent risk factor for developing Alzheimer's disease. And another thing that's getting a lot of press these days is head trauma. And there's some growing evidence. There's still a lot that we're learning about head trauma, but there's evidence that people who've had a lot of blows to the head over their life are at more risk of getting dementia from a variety of causes, including Alzheimer's disease. Low education level. The fact that you're here tonight is a protective factor. What are the symptoms? So the most common first symptom in somebody who's going on to develop Alzheimer's disease is the inability to recall recent conversations, recent events, basically
Well, there you go. I'm going to take a break and we'll come right back. Hopefully Michael will be here. I know he's not around, so do stay tuned. We'll be right back.
For over 30 years, there has been one voice in the local Vancouver art scene that has stood above the rest, and that's Discorder, that conspiracy, punk rock, foxcore, sassy, still publishing magazine from CITR. We're one of the established and trusted voices of Vancouver's music and arts culture in the Lower Mainland, with 8,000 copies distributed monthly to over 135 distribution locations, from the Lido to Zulu Records.
Discorder is one of a few magazines published by a community radio station, and we only serve up the freshest local and Canadian goods.
We have interviews with artists, album reviews, live show reviews, and articles about everything important to our crazy, unique, varied, and amazing culture in Vancouver and across the country.
Pick up your free copy of Discorder today, or sign up to have it delivered to your door wherever you are.
Check out our website for distribution locations and all the information about advertising and getting it.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Duh. Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips.
And of course, welcome back to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. We're going to come back to the latest on Alzheimer's disease research by Speaker Gregory A. Greg. No, not Gregory. Jeffrey A. Kirchner. So let's listen in.
Learning new skills. What's your opinion on this?
Listen to this man. He's smart. So the question is, he's heard about crossword puzzles, learn a new language, learn a new skill, do all of these things. These are fabulous ways of keeping your brain agile and young. And there's good data that doing those kinds of things helps to prevent dementia. Now, I have patients who I diagnose with Alzheimer's disease, and they say, "Doc, I did all of those things." I tell, it would have started 3 years earlier had you not done those things. That's what I say to them. That's right. That's right. Good. You just ask a question, so I'll go to you, ma'am.
Can the symptoms that you describe be affected by altitude?
So the question is, are symptoms of cognitive loss affected by altitude? In a normal, healthy person, no. Fast changes in altitude can make all kinds of funny things happen in the body. But if you live a mile above the ocean and you're stabilized at that altitude, no. In somebody who has blood vessel disease, whose blood vessels are at sea level or just barely getting enough oxygen and glucose to the brain, and then you put them up at a higher altitude, they might show some problems. But that would be for cognitive loss that's due to a blood vessel issue. I can't think of a connection between Alzheimer's disease and altitude, though.
So there could be cognition impairment that's related to whether you're living in the mountains right now or living at sea level.
It's possible, but I don't think that where a person lives is likely to have a clinically significant impact on their cognition. Yes, sir.
talk about a list of words. How many words?
How many what?
So that's a bit of a clip of the latest Alzheimer's disease research. You can check it out on Standard Healthcare on YouTube, and you check out the word for Jeffrey A. Kirchner to continue on with the rest of his speech. You are tuned in to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. My name's Kelly Rayburn, and guess who just showed up?
Yes, I did just show up.
There we go.
Apparently, a
big accident.
A dump truck versus a car or something like that. So there's never much of any winners when something like that happens, right?
I wonder if they have somebody got that on video, a live thing.
Yeah.
Just send it over to YouTube. They get a lot of Vancouver crash stuff on that thing. So
just let me...
should be really interesting.
Load up our Skype here.
Our Skype, yes.
We're going to be speaking with today with Dale Gillespie. And Dale is, he's a scriptwriter.
Yep.
And if you remember our friend Marie Kern.
Yes.
He actually works with Marie.
Yeah.
I think he is their lead scriptwriter.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's also going to talk, I guess maybe he'll talk about some of the other projects, because I heard that the Sorcerer's Raven Productions has some other things rolling up their sleeves.
Okay.
But he does it all from his home. He unfortunately, Dale doesn't get to get out much because of arthritis in his back.
Okay.
Hello.
Dale, are you there?
I are here.
So we were talking a bit of mean stuff about you.
Your half of you is missing.
Oh, yeah.
you were from here down.
we actually had the cameras between us and Dale on Skype, so he can see us.
Hello.
So and there, that's Kelly. So yep. We were trying to get through some of your accolades with working with the Sorcerer's Raven Productions and Tales of Mithril with Marie Kern.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many other things that you've done as far as script writing, and it's rumored that you were once the Santa Claus in the Rogers Parade here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about who you are, what you've done through your life. And
oh, okay. Well, I was born a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, of course.
Did we tell you he writes comedy also?
Yes. Michael, I am not your father.
No!
Different, lots of different things. Basically, for careers and stuff, I've had various things going on. I've done a little bit of acting in front of the camera as an extra, and a couple of roles here and there. I used to be a makeup artist, so I've been on both sides of the camera in film production. Yes, I'm a Santa Claus, at the moment, not able to be a Santa Claus.
Mm.
So, but I did the Rogers Vancouver Santa Claus Parade for the first 10 years. It started in 2005. And my last year in the parade was in 2013. Would be my last one, and then I handed over the reins to I won't say who Santa is.
Well, no.
I turned the reins over to Santa, and he's having a really good time. This will be his second year now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm and you know, it was a little hard to do it, but I had 10 years.
Mm.
on 10 years of the most fun that I've ever had in my life doing the parade. I cannot say enough good and nice things about the Rogers Vancouver Santa Claus Parade.
How did the city react on your the Santa Claus Parade?
Well, it was interesting. The first one, I'll never forget that first one. Sitting up on the float, waiting to go. Being Santa Claus, of course, it's going to be the last float of the parade.
Right, of course.
And so I'm sitting there down at the foot of Burrard, waiting. Oh, it's time to go now. So we're moving along, and the sidewalks were like, you know, packed like 5, 6, 7 deep. And they started applauding, and I didn't get it at first.
Right.
I wondered, well, why are they applauding? Why? And then I suddenly, oh, it's for you, you idiot. They're applauding Santa Claus. And I started to cry.
Yes.
I got a little emotional. And so basically since that first parade, it just built and built and built and got better and better and better. And the parade route was longer the next year. And it's the parade route they have now.
Right.
And then we stuck to that parade route, except for that one year when there was that protest.
Okay.
You know, the tent city outside of the old court building.
Oh, okay.
So we had to... We had to change the route slightly that year. But basically, it was a heck of a sleigh ride. I'll put it that way, a heck of a sleigh ride. I got to do things that I never would have thought I'd, you know, be doing. I mean, riding on a helicopter to go see children in a hospital here and in Victoria. Who weren't going to be able to, you know, come to the parade, never mind, might not be home for Christmas. So I got to do stuff like that, you know, interviews on radio and on TV, and, you know, and it was just the time of my life. It was, you know, incredible. And now I know the Santa that's there now, that's what he's got in store for him.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
It was amazing. I mean, I'd never been in a helicopter before. So, I mean, I got no qualms about flying, but I thought, oh, I wonder what this is going to be like. And it...
Where did the helicopter take you?
Well, the first year we went over to Victoria General.
Okay.
And then over to... Royal Columbian Hospital. And then after that, we only did Royal Columbian until 2013. And we did Royal Columbian, Shaughnessy, Royal Children's Hospital, and Victoria General. We'd never done three before. And I think, I'm not sure which hospitals they did last year other than Royal Columbian. And I don't know which hospitals they're going to do this year. I'm sure they're still going to do Royal Columbian. Yeah. But I remember one year we couldn't do the helicopter flight because the winds were so high.
Right.
So Santa had to get in his sleigh and the reindeer had to take him over to Royal Columbian. And so we did it that way. But, wow. It's been a lot of fun. It's always been in conjunction with the food bank. So most years we did a Christmas in July for the food bank, raising money and food for the food bank. So that was a lot of fun. And I've been, you know, Santa Claus in the malls and stuff. So seeing lots of little ones through the years.
What was one of your favorite malls?
not to plug any malls, but basically I've been at Lynn Valley, Capilano,
right.
Loheed, Willowbrook, and Seven Oaks. I think Seven Oaks.
Okay.
It was a long trip for me, but I think Seven Oaks, I had the best time, and I had pretty much the same crew all the way through. We had, my elves and my Mrs. Claus was pretty much the same all in all of those malls.
Now Seven Oaks is down near Abbotsford.
Seven Oaks. Yeah. It's in Abbotsford. Yeah. The big mall in Abbotsford.
Okay.
Oh.
And the Santa that's doing the parade now, that's his mall now.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And he actually lives out there. So,
oh, okay.
Oh.
Not a long drive.
I bet.
Yeah.
Like, he's basically, I think, down the street.
It could also be a long bus ride as well.
well, when you're Santa, you know, you just jump on one of the reindeer, right, and you kind of fly in there, right? You don't have to worry about traffic.
Yeah, don't bother with the sleigh. You just get on Comet or one of them, and off you go.
Yeah.
You know, I don't ride with Chet anymore, though. He's got landing issues.
Oh.
Nice.
And if you want to know about the screenwriting, I started that back in about 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I was a security guard and graveyard, and I was looking for something to do.
Right.
I mean, you know, because, you know, you do your job, but you're sitting there.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to take a break for just a moment. Sure. Can you just hold on for a moment?
Sure, pay the bills.
All right. So, yeah, and of course, we're only volunteers here on CITR, so we just need to some little announcements. So we'll be back in a moment. You're tuned into the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks.
Shindig, CITR's annual band competition, is in its 30th year promoting new local bands and providing great prizes. Shindig happens every Tuesday at Pat's Pub and Brewhouse at 403 East Hastings Street. So come check out the talent while they compete to win studio time, features in Discorder magazine, buttons, merch, and more. Enjoy locally made beer, pool, and CITR DJs spinning after the bands. It was Shindig Night 8 is happening this Tuesday, December 8th, featuring Francesca Belcourt, Branza, and At Sea. Cover is $6 at the door, and the show is 19+. Check out CITR on Facebook or on Twitter at CITR Shindig for all the details. Hold my breath and fly
away to what a lullaby. Understand more about fashion. We asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because, of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a clothing.
If you really want to know more about fashion, I mean, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode.
So for me,
nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the Europe.
Late Night Show is the start of the weekend. We play all types of D&D or jungle for the first half of the show. On the second half of the show, it gives you that irritating noise that you just don't want to hear it. Or it could be some ambient sounds that might drift off and or fall asleep in the moment of life. Or it could be some new age that you just heard on most stations, but even better. Or it could be that this music has no beat or drums in that music. Either way, tune into the Late Night Show, now broadcasting on Saturday mornings at 12:30 a.m. right after the Medicine Show, also hosted by me, DJ Rain, and Jason Lawrence. If you happen to hear us around the world, you can always check us out at CITR.ca. Yes, and we're back on to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. Kelly Rayburn, along with Michael Rubin, and we have on Skype is Dale
Gillespie.
He is. Hello.
And he is the screenwriter for Tales of Mithril.
Tales of Mithril, and of course he was the Santa Claus of the Santa Claus Parade for the past 10 years, you said?
Yeah, until 2013.
That's right.
Yeah.
That was my last year.
Hmm.
So,
And it was a quite success, right?
Oh, good Lord, yes. And continues to be.
Well, yeah, it has been.
We're actually going to have to post a picture of Dale. Because people need to actually see Dale. He looks the part.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we'll post it on Facebook or YouTube or one of those ones.
Okay.
What he looked like.
Yeah.
At the time.
Just as long as you don't post the picture that I just posted on Facebook.
Okay.
It's from a horror movie that I worked on a couple weeks ago.
Oh. So now you're doing horror movies? Is that what's...
Well, a friend of mine, she directs some horror movies. Mm-hmm. And that's right, I said she.
Awesome.
She's a woman director. And she specializes in horror movies. Hmm. I'll make a plug for her, if that's all right.
Sure.
Go ahead, by all means.
Luchagore Productions. And they're gearing up right now to make a feature of one of their shorts. They adapted the first chapter of a book. And it's about a Spanish wrestler, and it's fiction, of course. Yeah. And I always assumed the writer was Spanish, was a Mexican. He's Canadian. I'm not sure where he lives, but he's Canadian or American, and he is not of Spanish descent, I don't think. But she specializes in these movies. You can go online to her website and look at them. And she is just phenomenal. I think she graduated Cap College in 2003, and her and a lot of her classmates got together and created this production company.
Cool. So what did you do with them?
Well, I auditioned for her, actually. I don't know what year it was. It was at Cap College when she was still going there, I think. Or still affiliated with it. And I had auditioned for a student film, and she was doing the casting.
Mm-hmm.
And she just remembered me all these years later. And then a few years ago, she contacted me, asked me if I'd be interested in working on a Santa movie that she wanted to do, not this one. And I said yes. And then she got really, really busy and still hasn't been able to make it. And then in October, she contacted me and said, what are you doing at the end of November? And I said, well, not much. And she said, well, I've got this little project. It's like a Christmas card, a video Christmas card to her supporters and her fans.
Right.
And it's a horror movie with me.
Yes.
And so it was a lot of fun. I had a little bit of difficulty because of the arthritis in my back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I was bound and determined that I was going to get out of the house and I was going to do this for her. And they were very, very, very accommodating for me. I scored an office chair. We shot it in the back of a tire store, believe it or not, owned by one of the crew. And so basically I'd walk out on set, they'd bring the office chair on wheels that I was sitting on. And basically I'd sit there on set until it was, time to be in front of the camera. And so I'd get up and I'd hand over my cane and I'd do whatever I needed to do. And they said, if you got to sit, just tell us. And we'll get the chair back in. So there were a couple times where my back was a little dicey, but I just do it.
Awesome.
Just do it. And And that's the way I, you know, it's been with my back like this. It actually started in about 2006, maybe. I noticed when I was a security guard and I'd be doing my patrols outside, and my back would hurt over on the left lower right side. And I figured, oh, well, it'll just get stronger, you know, because you're exercising.
Right.
And like half of the patrol, I'd do half the patrol and then I'd go in and report to one of the commission air stations and sign in, sit there and chat for a while, and then go back out and finish it. And it would just, you know, feel worse and worse. And basically there was nowhere to sit. And I just know, just Dale, just motor through. And that's what I do now a lot of the times, is I just Dale motored through.
Right.
And that's what I did sometimes. Okay, can you hold? No, I'm going to have to let this go. My brother's coming over, but can I take this just for a second and make him go away?
All right, well, we'll do that as well. So I'll just let listeners know that you're listening to Community Living Show. We're talking with Dale Gillespie, who was the Santa Claus parade from the Rogers thing. So anyways.
Well, you know what I'm curious about now that curious. I think we should ask him, because he was writing the script for and is writing the script, should I say, for Tales of Mithril. Mm-hmm. And say, what is some of the inspirations behind writing that script is?
And he's back right now.
Is
so
he back?
Yeah.
I are back. My brother needed to know where something was.
Okay, so we were asking you about Tales of Mithril and the information on with Marie Kearns. We had her on the program a few years back. And,
yeah.
So what inspires you to have this? I mean, sorry, I'm trying to get this words out What kind of inspires you to deal with the Tales of Mirthwell and the do you do any type of voice or any type of things happening on there?
Well, I mean, Marie fortunately set me up with a real good, like a synopsis for each episode.
Okay.
What she wanted for each episode. And there's, like, I've written 28, I think. And so I've got a lot of inspiration right there. Mm-hmm. And she has created such an interesting, diverse world that is, you know, I mean, you know, it's somewhat like our world,
mm-hmm.
and not. So I, you know, I just drew on my imagination, plus using, you know, things, you know, because you have to make it familiar too.
Mm-hmm.
So right. It can't be totally foreign and alien. You have to have some reference in the real world.
And because you want people to be able to relate to it, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the people in one of the Skypes, they put me on to steampunk, and my brother had talked about steampunk. So in the pilot episode, one of the stars of the series, she gets picked up by a limo at her home and whisked away to where she needs to go. And I thought, well, let's so I Googled steampunk limousines.
Right.
And you know, I looked at some of the pictures of there, and that's how I got my description of, you know, the car. I guess I take some of my inspiration from, you know, I guess the everyday world plus, you know, fantasy. I'm a big fan of science fiction and alternate history and alternate worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I've just, you know, it comes out of my fingers. I mean, I know, I mean, I have, I, that's my writing process. Like if I were to sit here and try and dictate to you a script, I couldn't do it. But if I sit down and type it, it comes out of my fingers. That's okay. The only way I can describe it. It used to be that I had to do this process writing longhand. I can't do that anymore.
Is it why? Because of your Alzheimer's?
No. It's not because of the arthritis.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
It's just it doesn't come to me that way anymore.
Okay.
My process has changed. It used to be I'd sit in front of the keyboard and I couldn't do anything, so I'd have to sit and write it out.
Mm.
Now it's the other way around. And I can also like put something down and stop writing it for a while, and then I can come back and pick it right up.
Mm.
As if I'd been writing it all along. But with the mithril, basically I was just writing one after another.
Okay.
And then I would, you know, I would talk to Marie and the other people, and again it was a process.
Okay.
Yeah. So how important is it to stick to that process so that we keep the like the quality of the writing and your imagination flowing or in things like that?
I think it's very, you know, important because I get inspiration from the other people that are involved in Tales of Mithril. I'm not just Marie, the creator, but I also get inspiration from the artists as well, and people like you, mm-hmm. who, you know, we go over something and say, oh, well, you know, that's nice. Oh, but what about this?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could change this to that.
Right.
And rather than it's, you know, just my, because like the pilot for the show, the way it is now is literally worlds away from the very first draft of the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And plus it's 22 minutes long now, and originally it was 5.
Right.
But, and again, that was part of the process that we decided, well, let's hook up the first and second episode and make that the pilot.
So
a little longer.
Just so people know, is it the writing comes first, or does the artwork come first?
The writing has come first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Marie already had her series Bible and everything, so she knew what the characters looked like. Mm-hmm. She knew what Ajni and Thenia, they're the heroes, right. and the anti-hero of the story. So she knew what they looked like, and there are a lot of like already established characters, but I made up a lot of characters too. So they still have to be realized in artwork.
What's your
it's both, I guess you could say. The initial artwork came, and then she wrote the synopsises, I guess.
Okay.
Or for all I know, she wrote the synopsises and then did the artwork. But for me, I had the advantage that, okay, I can look at these pictures, and plus she's given me, you know, a breakdown of this is what I want the story to be this week.
Very quickly, we got about less than 2 minutes left. What are your plans for December for this year? Don't mind me asking. For this year, as if you're going to be dressed as Santa Claus for...
Unfortunately, I won't be.
Okay.
So basically, the horror movie, that was my shot at being Santa this year.
Oh, I see.
So that's another reason I was bound and determined to do it.
Anything special on Christmas Day?
No, not really.
Okay.
Not just really. I don't know if I'm going over to my brother's for Christmas or not.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not, then it's just here and whatever with my roommates.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Dale, thank you for having us onto the show.
And thank you for having me. I hope I was okay.
Yep. Although Michael was late anyways, you're Santa anyways, you're the Santa that we know.
Yeah, that's right. It's like you can't go wrong with having Santa on the show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We'll see you later, Dale.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. So that was Dale Gillespie. Mm-hmm.
Gillespie, yes.
Gillespie.
Yeah.
Not Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah.
And that was...
Well, I think it's spelled kind of the same, but, you know.
Yeah. But anyways, that's the show.
Yeah.
That was a good talk. If you want to listen to it again, you can listen to it on...
We're going to put it up on Facebook and...
Yeah, hopefully we get it on Facebook and Twitter and of course, our website, the CITR website as well. So.
And our podcast, you know.
And the podcast, everything. So... If you like what you hear, you can email us, Gmail on Gmail, say communitylivingradio@gmail.com. And that is our show.
So tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yes.
We might have a surprise drop-in.
Oh, okay.
We were talking to Dale about video and movies and things like that.
Yes.
So I have to deliver a movie to one of our past guests, and she might stop by early enough over at CFRO that we might be able to get her on air for a quick update about what's going on with her and her MS.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
On Co-op Radio and next week on our full hour.
Yep.
See you again, folks. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right.